Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Chip Webster. Chip Webster is a seasoned leader, entrepreneur, and advocate for civic engagement. As the former president of Vistage Florida, he spent over 25 years mentoring CEOs and driving business growth, and is the current chairman of the board of Tampa Bay Watch. Beyond the corporate world, he recently founded Unity in Service, Inc., a nonprofit dedicated to rebuilding trust through volunteerism and civic action. His latest book, Unity in Service, A Pathway to Responsible Citizenship, explores how service can bridge divides and strengthen democracy. Chip continues to mentor young entrepreneurs and champion the power of responsible citizenship. Chip, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure having you on the program today.
Dave, great to see you again.
And we got to give a shout out to Noemi Barris. It seems like I've been giving a shout out to Noemi every other podcast I've recorded lately. But Noemi is a wonderful podcast agent who introduced us, and we had a great pre-chat. We found that we aligned on a lot of different levels, and we find ourselves today recording our podcast episode.
She's a gem.
Yeah, she's a person who takes a sincere interest in her clients and is very mindful about who she matches her clients with as far as podcast hosts. She does a great job, and every time she refers a potential guest contributor to me, it's a no-brainer for me. It's the only question becomes is during the pre-call, am I going to pass inspection with her client? No.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. But anyway, Chip, I got a few questions for you. First of all, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
I've had a lot of different jobs. It's always been about people, and all organizations have been about trust. And I've been observing this deterioration of trust in the country. It's bothered me quite a bit. And further research, Pew has done some studies showing dramatic changes. An example, and I'll be off a few percentage points, is hospitals had 80% trust, and now it's like in the high 30s. Colleges and universities, the same. There's a whole long list, and that's scary. And then recently, Allstate Insurance did their own study called the Trust Tipping Point. And the amount of trust has gone down. People don't even trust their neighbors. 40% of the people don't know or trust their neighbors. And if you turn on the news and start watching different programs, you go to one network, to another, and they're telling what's supposed to be the same story, but they're unrecognizable because the twist they want to put on it. How can you trust the news? It is a real concern of mine that we cannot trust each other. And without trust, ultimately you lose the relationships, and ultimately I think we can lose our nation.
Yeah, I agree. The fact that you just quoted that the trust in hospitals and our educational institutions have gone down, those are two of the most important staples of any society, is trusting the medical care you're going to get and trusting the education you're going to get. And the fact that we can't even now trust our own neighbors, or we're wary of our own neighbors, I think there's a lot of factors that have gone into that, and I'm sure you have a handle on what some of those factors are. What do you think has been the primary reason that the trust factor has deteriorated across so many different institutions in our society today?
Great question. I think it's a combination of technology. You can sit home and not go outdoors and theoretically connect with other people, although I don't think it's a full connection. When I was growing up, you may remember this, Dave, but around 11 o'clock on your television, they'd sign off and there would be that sign-off logo that hummed till 6 in the morning. And so we were actually forced to talk to each other. We needed each other more. I lived in California for the first part of my life, but when I moved to Chicago my senior year of high school, I first learned about snowstorms and electricity going out. You know, neighbors helped each other, shoveled each other's sidewalks, made sure somebody had firewood.
Yep.
Now we don't seem to need that. So this false sense of not needing each other breaks down the barriers. When COVID came, my wife and I sold our boat and bought a RV, and we did 5 loops of the U.S., literally Seattle to San Diego to Bayhead, New Jersey to St. Pete, and a few stops in between. And different markets I'd walk, try to get 15,000 steps in a day. And it's amazing how in some places people have their headphones on, and when you walked, they looked the other way. In a little town in Minnesota when my wife was born, everybody said hi to each other. They were very gracious. Minnesota nice is real. But in Chula Vista, California, I played these games, and sometimes I would just say hi to everybody and see what happens. And about 20% would light up like a Christmas tree because nobody said hi to them in a long time. People need to be validated. We've not been validating them, and we set up barriers. And the larger the barrier we set up to interact, the more inward focused we are. This sort of compounds on itself.
Yeah, I agree. I think technology has been a big part of that. Look at a lot of young adults. A lot of them have checked out by basically just, you know, scrolling on the internet, scrolling social media, getting their news from TikTok or Facebook. And there's so much misinformation out there that it's difficult to understand what's real. And I think the other thing that technology has eroded is the ability to critically think.
So 2 data points. One, Deb and I were out to dinner a week ago, and we noticed this family with this little girl and 2 fairly young parents. And literally, the little girl had a stand so she could watch the video. And her parents were down with their heads down, looking at your video. We thought, well, when dinner comes, they'll stop. They just were head down, shoveling it in. That doesn't work long term.
No. I want to get into your nonprofit, Unity in Service. What inspired its creation, and what is your mission?
Well, the mission is to help people become responsible citizens, and write about it in the book. And the mission is to break down barriers between these 2 silos that we're stuck in. And you do that by working on projects. One of the things I've observed, I've done a lot of other nonprofits, but Tampa Bay Watch is where I'm spending most of my time now. We're a very diverse board politically, but we have one mission, and it's the health of the Bay and education about the Bay and restoration of the Bay. And we don't care who you voted for or when. We're trying to fix the Bay. And if you work together with people over time, you begin to see them as humans, not as the people that don't think the way you do. We have gone through a very serious culture evolution or devolution of demonizing people who don't think the way we do or vote the way we do. And democracy has always been a compromise, and we want lots of different perspectives. And if you have 10 people in the room and you hammer something out, you're going to come up with a better idea than any one of the 10 could. You know, nobody's as smart as all of us.
Yeah.
And that's where democracy is supposed to work. But we've been, politicians and the media have leveraged these divides to energize their extreme supporters, but leaving the people in the middle out. I think the moderate Republicans, moderate Democrats, and centrists, if we got together and focused on breaking down the barriers and compromise and only electing people who put nation first instead of party first, we would be much further along.
Yeah, certainly tribalism has been the word of the day in terms of describing the way government has worked. And we're just polarized on so many different cultural, religious, and political divides that it's all about which tribe you're a part of. And if you're not a part of this particular tribe, then those particular tribes tend to be very steadfast in their beliefs to the point where they may reject any other perspectives that might actually expand their belief systems or give them a different perspective on something they hadn't considered before. When we are so focused on being polarized around a particular side, we tend to lose focus of the entire picture.
Right. And the sad thing is that in those tribes, we're all part of a tribe, and that's how we survived. But the tribes today have put it so if you agree with somebody in the other tribe, you're kicked out of the tribe or driven out because you voted or helped somebody on the other side. And that's counter democracy.
In terms of talking about your mission for unity and service, regardless of religious ideology, political ideology, if you bring a group of individuals together around a shared mission, around a shared value, they come together with that. And I think because they're working together, they will see some more commonalities while respecting their differences.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he lives in a very small town in Montana. And he said his neighborhood is comprised of a lot of different individuals, Republicans, Democrats. But he said, if for some reason our road gets blocked because trees fall down and we can't get out, we all have to pull together and get the job done. And I think if we can do that and come together around shared tasks, we find our common humanity.
Yeah, you know, working together on a community or national project that makes us part of something bigger than ourselves, I think that begins to dissolve the differences. And the more we do that, the more open we are to other people's perspective, and the more we feel part of the same larger tribe.
Yeah, and being connected to something greater than ourselves promotes spiritual awareness, more tolerance, and realization that behind the obvious mask of that human individual is a soul that goes deeper than what the human experience belies. And if we can allow ourselves to become connected to just something greater than ourselves, we see the totality of everything.
You're spot on. Totally agree.
And that's the objective, is to get people off the couch, outside, go volunteer for Habitat for Humanity. So that's one of the big objectives. You asked about the mission. Having people understand what a responsible citizen does and looks like. It's a chapter in the book about that. And I think people should read that chapter and then make their own list, because they may have a different twist on it than I do. But number one is mutual safety, support, defense. Because if we don't do that, everything else is sort of academic.
Yep.
Getting that out. And then also, over 60 countries in the world have required national service. And I believe that has helped break down the barriers. And if every 18-year-old spent a year after they get out of high school, you know, if you're from upstate New York, you'd go to, Des Moines. If you're from Des Moines, you'd go to San Francisco and work with people from all around the country and work on a project, the CCC program that Franklin Roosevelt put in, built a lot of the national parks, built water systems. I was in Caldwell, Idaho, and out walking on a reservoir dam. And I looked down at this marker, and it was CCC, like CCC 1936, that built this reservoir that has allowed ever since then for that part of Idaho to be farmed because it had the water.
Yeah.
If we did that together, we would feel more attached. I think a lot of people look at this country like a rental car. You know, what's the old story? Nobody ever washed a rental car. I think a lot of people are just passing through. Well, we all need sweat equity.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is create a group and put together the financial wherewithal to start running ad campaigns in markets to do two things. One, talk about what a responsible citizen looks like, and then getting people out to vote. As you probably know, only 66% of the people typically vote in the presidential elections. Mm-hmm. In the midyears, which is less in the how we elect the House and a third of the Senate, it's like 40-45%. Yeah. And if you go to local elections, it's a good election if you get 20% of the people out. Democracy is a do-it-to-ourselves project. Mm-hmm. And if we want to change the direction, if we want to have a healthy society for our children and grandchildren, we have to get out and get engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have to make our voices heard and realize that our vote is important and everybody's vote is important. And if we can pass that message on one voter at a time, our statistics as far as the number of individuals who come to vote and the percentages are going to go higher.
I mean, Joe Biden had one vote. Donald Trump had one vote. Everybody else has one vote.
Yeah.
Your vote in Biloxi, Mississippi is as important as the vote in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the biggest lie I think we tell ourselves is that our vote or what we do may not make as great a difference as somebody else's. And everything we do makes a difference. We're all like drops in the sea of humanity, and each one of those drops has a specific purpose. And each one of those drops will make up the waves that are so important in terms of the waves of change or the waves of innovation. You move one or two drops from that, the form of those waves change and the impact's different.
Absolutely. I think it was Marshall McLuhan said, we're all on spaceship Earth. None of us are passengers, we're all crew. Mm-hmm. I don't think people understand it. We have the government we deserve. We are the crew. We're the problem and we're the solution.
Yep. And we have to view ourselves as both and be accountable to both.
Yeah, I've used the metaphor that the United States is a public company and each one of us has one share. And it's up to us to vote our share every year for the board of directors. It's a metaphor that sticks in my mind. I'm looking for a better one. I'm open to it.
Well, if I can think of a better metaphor, I'll definitely shoot you an email, Chip.
It's a deal.
You got it. So I know you've alluded to your book, Unity in Service, A Pathway to Responsible Citizenship. Right. I know you talked about one chapter in there about what it takes to be a responsible citizen. What are some other, tell us more about the book, what it's about, what you want readers to take away from it.
Well, it starts out with a letter to my fellow citizens about we're responsible for where we are and only we can change it. Then I talk about tribes and why they exist. And when the first tribes were formed, it's because if we weren't part of a tribe, if there was a hungry animal out there, we'd be good dinner. And then if there was another tribe that didn't agree with us, we'd be maybe, depending where you were, a good dinner for them. So we got together to survive. And I think one of the questions people asked, this is a big assumption, when I join a tribe is, am I going to be safer? Am I going to eat better? Will I live longer? Will I have shelter? And then I talk about the life cycles of a democracy. 1750, approximately, Alexander Teitelman wrote this book, this essay about life cycle of a democracy. And it starts out, you fight for your freedom, get your freedom. Because you have your freedom, you really excel and things are really great. And then things get really great. People start to get a little selfish. You know, the next generations, they mine, me. And pretty soon, they give it up to the government. The government's going to take care of me. Doesn't end well. It's interesting. There is an individual whose name will escape right now, who wrote Life Cycles of a Corporation. And if you look at the life cycle of a corporation and lay that Ishak Adizes, if you lay his theory over Tyler's, they're the same. And he uses an example. I started with Sears, and Sears, when I joined, was number one in the world. What did we do? We built the world's tallest building at the time. It was all about bureaucracy. It was all about who has the best office. It had nothing to do with taking care of the customer. And guess what? They went broke. So keeping the maintain, which is people's freedom, education, continuing that, carrying on the culture of why freedom is important, why communism is not good, why fascism is not good, and why we're so unique, and we truly are in the history of mankind. I talk about holding the media accountable. I talk about holding the politicians accountable.
Yep.
And of course, what a responsible citizen looks like. I tried to give sort of a progression of why we exist and then our ultimate responsibility, national service. And I also have included the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Gettysburg Address, which I think are the most important documents in our history. It's good to read them. You can see what the founders understood. And is it perfect? Churchill said the most ugly form of government is democracy, except it's better than all the others.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question, but that's the intent of the book is to give sort of a get up to 10,000 feet, look down on why we exist as a country, and then how can I contribute to continue our success?
Yeah, it's kind of like a very concise version of the history of the world and the history of our country from right. The Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address right up until to modern times. And I think one of the things that isn't emphasized enough is the importance of civic responsibility and civic duty. And that should be something that's a part of every school curriculum. If you're talking about civics courses, you're talking about history courses, how do you be a responsible citizen? We need those skills because those skills that we can build to be responsible citizens can help us throughout life. Anyway, they can generalize to other areas right. of our lives.
Several of the founding fathers said an educated population, educated citizens are required for democracy to work.
Yeah.
And I think we've been failing in that. I don't know if you've seen the study, something like 44% of the millennials think socialism is a solution. England tried it at a very deep level and they almost went broke. A lot of people think they use Sweden as a democratic socialist state. They backed way off of socialism. Socialism for me is state-owned means of production. That's one of the definitions. And now Sweden has less bureaucracy and less controls than we have in the United States, and they're thriving. But for a long time, it was state-owned. As we know, Margaret Thatcher got rid of some of the state-owned things in Britain, and they thrived.
Mm.
So, yeah, just understanding what's at risk. I would talk to people around the country when we're in our RV parks, and you get to know people and have interesting conversations. It's amazing how many people would complain about what's going on in the country today. And when I'd say, well, it's our fault, they'd look at me like I had two heads. And I said, well, it's a democracy. We elected these people.
Mm-hmm.
So gotta get engaged. We all have one vote and we need to use it thoughtfully.
Yeah, I agreed. If we don't vote, if you didn't vote, then you can't complain about the outcome.
Well, I wish that was true with most people. They complain no matter what.
Well, you know, the other part of being a responsible citizen, and I would put this somewhere in your list, is being accountable to yourself and to other people. When you make a mistake, when you have misinterpreted a person's philosophical position or just their views on life, you own it. That's how I think we also achieve some sort of humanity with each other. We're human with each other when we can be vulnerable enough to say we screwed up.
Well, I have 27 early signs of adulthood.
Well, the first ones is to be able to laugh at yourself.
I made a mistake. Let's fix it. Instead of trying to blame somebody else. And the other, just as you pointed out, is taking responsibility for your acts. It is amazing how many people in our culture now see themselves as victims. Well, guess what, pal? The only thing that can change it and the only person who can change that is you.
Mm-hmm.
Life is one-on-one, you and the person in the mirror.
Yeah.
We can disempower ourselves or we can empower ourselves. We can use our free will to choose either option.
When I ran sales organizations that were all straight commission and independent contractors, they say, success will not attack you. You got to get off the couch. You got to pick up the phone. You got to dial for dollars and get an appointment.
And you know, there are certain tragic events that will, by the natural course of action or initial results, will be disempowering. They'll just stop you in your tracks. So you sit with that, you learn from that, but then after that, I believe that we have a choice to re-engage, and we can empower ourselves to rise above circumstances, use those resources that we have out there, and also connect with communities that are going to support our re-engagement in life.
Absolutely.
We can encourage each other to do that, but ultimately the choice is ours, whether or not we are going to stay victimized or we are going to become empowered and take control of our own destiny.
I was watching an interview of Bo Jackson, who's doing some mentoring. I don't know if you remember Bo, incredible athlete. And the interviewer said, well, what do you look for in somebody you're going to mentor? I said, they have to have gotten off the couch. It's up to them. You can't steer a parked car.
My mother used to say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Yeah, I learned a lot of wisdoms like that from my mother. Things like, you can't make a silk spurs out of a sow's ear.
Never done.
Yeah, or my favorite is, you can't make a racehorse out of a jackass.
I think we have lots of examples of that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Why do you believe that working on different community projects, volunteering and engaging with those from different backgrounds can naturally dissolve division? I know you've touched on this a little bit. Let's kind of expound on that more. Why do you think that these factors can dissolve division?
Well, because you stop thinking about yourself and you start thinking about the mission and you start working with other people that are different than you. And you begin to learn they're not quite so different. They want the same thing. They want to have a family, or they want to have a community. They want to be respected. They want to be loved. We all want that. And so when you start working and breaking down those barriers, you're dissolving your prejudices. And I mean, how many times have you walked into a restaurant or into an experience and there's some person that looks really wild, and then you end up on the elevator together and you start having a conversation and they're really smart and they're really interesting? We have these assumptions. We go around and
we had to do that
back in the jungle because, you know, we had to know what a lion looked like and how to get rid of it or how the enemy looked like. But now we have all these prejudices that keep us from working or seeing other people as human. And by working with a diverse group on projects, those false barriers tend to dissolve. And you see their humanness, and they're good. 99% or 98%, I don't know what the number is, of people are really good people.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's an inherent good in most of humanity, and we're all driven by our assumptions. Our assumptions drive our behaviors. Our assumptions drive our beliefs. Some of those have been ingrained since we've been born. Others have been passed down from generation to generation. But rather than cancel somebody for their beliefs, let's sit down and find out how they got there. You know, I mean, if you and I had a difference of opinion on, let's say, how apples and oranges were created, I mean, just as an example,
right.
I would say, Chip, tell me how you came to the conclusion that apples were different than oranges. And what resources did you use? Help me understand. And it's not that I'm judging it. I just want to understand why you believe, and maybe understanding that can help us find the commonality within the difference.
Yeah, there's a part of my book that talks about that, talking to people who have a different perspective than you do. And you've seen people who won't go to the family Thanksgiving dinner because of the political differences. I've lost friends. They've just decided not to continue the relationship because of political differences. I've never tried to sell them on anything, you know, just, but they know how I vote and how I think, and therefore they're uncomfortable with me. And if we just want to break that barrier down, just simple say, I'm curious. Just like, how did you come to the conclusion that the orange was better than the apple? Well, the seeds are this, or they grow more sun, or there's more vitamin C, or there's more fiber. Tell me more.
Yeah.
And not trying to get them to see it differently. And when they're done, don't say, well, this is what I think. Let them ask you. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And the best way to show somebody you care is to listen.
Yes. I tell my students that the prerequisite to being an outstanding therapist is your ability to listen before you provide observations or clinical impressions, because your abilities to listen communicates a message that that person's story is important, that you want to understand how they believe and what they believe, and that based on what they're telling you about their lives, you want to design a plan of action for them to re-engage in life or achieve their goals based on their own unique perspectives.
So being curious about that and asking questions around that curiosity is spot on. I had an old business partner, a great guy. He said, you should listen till you get a hernia.
Yeah. If I listen that long and I do end up getting a hernia, I'll be the first one to tell you.
So far, I've failed that test.
Yeah, yes, and I would second that. I failed the test, and I'm thankful that's one test I did not pass. Because as my wife knows, I'm not very good sitting still for any period of time. I've got to be moving. I've got to be doing something. I've got to be engaged.
I think somebody once said, if you can report, say back to the person what they said to you and they felt heard, then that's the test.
Yep.
You told me the orange is this and this is why. And you say, yeah, that's why. You've been heard.
Yeah. Or I could say, now I understand your perspective. And I may not agree with that perspective, but I understand how you got there.
Yeah.
And now, me being a skeptic now, I'm going to go research that. And see, does this have any applicability? Can this make sense in certain situations? Can I accept that in certain cases, a particular problem was solved not according to scientific theorem or existing scientific knowledge, but was based on something other than science, but yet was valid and worked for that situation? Can I accept that there are exceptions to how I believe, and can I use those exceptions to expand my own belief system?
Yeah. See the bigger world.
Yeah. It's a very simple process, but it all starts by us being willing to listen and not judge and not try to convince people you need to believe how I believe. You need to join my tribe and reject yours. It's just a matter of understanding and finding that commonality. What are just some small acts of service that can create lasting change, reinforce the importance of civic engagement, and maybe in some way bring us all together?
Can I read a poem?
You can do whatever you want. This is your platform, Chip.
Okay. Here's a poem I wrote after I wrote the book. It's called Microvalidations. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. English proverb. Microclimates, microbiomes, microaggressions. We live in a microclimate. Microbiomes live in us. Microaggressions are part of life. What we need more of are microvalidations, more microaffirmations. We've become trapped in our silos. We've become contemptuous of those who don't agree with us. They must not be human. Our country, our cities, our friends have become divided. We can't keep distancing ourselves from each other. We must all hang together, or most assuredly we'll hang separately. Benjamin Franklin. Our children, our grandchildren need us to hang together for their future. A healthy democracy requires its citizens to work together to remain free. We need to see our interdependence and break down the barriers that divide us. We need each other. Start with microvalidations. Open the door for someone and say hello. Talk to your neighbors. Look people in the eye and acknowledge they exist. Reconnect with each other. Affirm the humanness of everyone. So to answer your question, start engaging with people. Start acknowledging them. Start talking to people in the grocery store. That will open yourself up. And then ask yourself, what am I interested in, and where can I go volunteer to continue this growth? But it starts with microvalidations. Just simple, say hello.
You know, I love that, because one of the things I tell my students is that if you want to do a social experiment, hold the door open for somebody you don't know. Watch what happens when you do that and you smile at that person you're holding the door for. They're going to smile and hold the door for the next person.
Yeah.
I said, talk to somebody in the hall you don't know. Smile, because they may be having the worst day of their lives.
Right.
They may be thinking of checking out of this world, and that one smile or asking them how they're doing and telling them that, hey, I think you like their shirt or you just like the way they look, or you heard them speak in a class and you thought they said something that was very intelligent. Just those little things that I think can bring us all together and transcend any differences in ideology that we have. It's common compassion, it's common decency, and it's treating people with love and respect.
My mom used to say, love is reflected in love.
Yep. And whenever you're doing heart-centered therapy, you're doing heart-centered service, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Your words will always be seen as meaningful.
Yes, totally agree.
Chip, if you could leave our listeners with one ultimate wisdom today, what would that be?
That's a great question.
Take time to do a personal retreat. Go away for a few days by yourself, no TV, turn off your cell phone, and ask this question. Why am I here? And what price am I willing to pay to be that?
So why am I here, and what price am I willing to pay to be here?
Why am I here in the history of mankind? And am I willing to be true to that? Is it making a ton of money? Is it have the biggest airplane? I don't know. Maybe not. But why am I here? And then to help others, or to keep growing, or to give back, or to make it, leave it better than I found it. And however that manifests itself. But get clear on why you are here and what you can do to make the world better than it is today.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Chip, with my own challenges in life, I've defined abundance a lot differently. When I was younger, abundance was the amount of money I had in the bank, the chances for promotions. Now abundance is having enough to be comfortable, and the richness in the relationships that I build moving forward. That's my definition of abundance now.
I'm sure you've seen that Harvard study that started back in the 30s that JFK was part of. It's a longitudinal study about quality of life. And is it how much money you have? Is it where you've been or how big your house is? No, it's relationships.
Yeah, because you can't take money with you in the next existence, but you can. Relationships are forever, and the impact that we have on an individual is going to last long after we've left this earth. And that's how we leave our legacy, by those tracks that we leave behind and the impact that we have on others that have crossed our tracks.
Tracks on each other's hearts.
Absolutely. That might be another poem. When you get the first draft done, let me know.
Chip, just make sure you didn't walk through the mud before you get to my heart.
That's another one. That's the B-side. So anyway, Chip, I got one last question for you. This is an opportunity to promote yourself a little bit. If individuals want to contact you, purchase your book, find out how to get involved with Unity and Service, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the first thing you can do is go to Amazon and purchase the book. You can go to the website, unityandservice.org. And you can reach me, Chip, at Unity in Service. And I'd love to talk to people. What I'm trying to do is put together a movement. I need people that are interested in leaving it better than we found it. To get the financial wherewithal to do our ad campaign. So there's a lot of things we can do. But most importantly, just smile at somebody tomorrow and open the door.
You can bet that I will take that advice to heart. I will be doing that as soon as I get up in the morning. I'll do that to my wife first, and then I'll go outdoors and smile at the first person I see.
Good. Mission accomplished.
You got it. Chip, thank you so much for spending time with me this evening. I had a blast talking with you, and I hope we can do this again in the future.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime, Dave.
Thank you. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.